Hey there, IndyCar fans. This is Nathan Brown, your Motorsports Insider with the Indianapolis Star for a special edition of this week's IndyCar Weekly podcast. I'm joined here by the, for the first time, we can introduce him as the driver of the number 45 Hy-Vee Honda for Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan Racing. It's my co-host Jack Harvey to talk about yesterday's news where he and Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan Racing were finally able to announce publicly that Jack will be driving the number 45 on a multi-year deal moving forward, heading into the 2022 IndyCar season and beyond. I know it's some news that a lot of us had certainly speculated about, but caught even, frankly, I'll admit, even me a little bit off guard with the news that it would be the 45, not the 30, that we had some good jokes and laughs about that on yesterday's IndyCar Media Zoom call. Obviously something you had known, Jack, for quite some time, but did you get a little bit of a kick out of, maybe catching some folks off guard and still having a little bit of new news to share that was a surprise to some folks yesterday?
For sure. I mean, it was nice to, have a little something extra up our sleeve. When I went to the factory to film the content for the announcement videos and whatnot, we said that we thought people would get a kick out of, well, at least we'd be a little bit surprised seeing that it was going to be the 45, because obviously everyone had speculated that we would be moving there, but also that we'd just be going straight into the 30. And as it's my understanding that I will have a lot of the 30 crew and engineering staff, it's just with the number 45, I guess Hy-Vee were, excited at, what we could do together, and I ended up getting put in that car. But I don't care about the car number. I just want the cars to be fast and competitive. And I know we're going to get that at RLL. And to be honest with you, it was so nice yesterday just to finally be able to put out what we're doing. Getting asked about it a lot. And ultimately not being able to always give a very good answer apart from, let's wait and see. Sometimes there's a little, not repetitive, I understand that's the way it goes. It's just nice to be able to have it all out there in the open finally.
Absolutely. I will have a handful of questions for you, thoughts we can go back and forth on. And then, of course, we've got some great questions from folks on Twitter that chimed in a good amount for this episode. I know lots of folks had been very curious and understandably had some questions. The first thing that stood out to me, which I dove into a little bit in a story that published this morning on IndyStar.com, was how complimentary you guys, between you and your history, particularly this year, with the strength in qualifying and the Ray Hall team bringing a dose of consistency, stability, and the idea that in lots of ways, it's something I think both of you guys had kind of been searching for a little bit. One of the stats I found was that this year of, across the whole paddock from teams that competed full season, Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan was, I think, one of only three teams not to place a driver in the top three in qualifying at any race this year. And you did so yourself, I think it was three times. On the other end of that, Graham, I think only had one driver that had more top seven finishes than he did all year. And that, of course, was series champion Alex Palou. So there's a lot of, I think maybe your guys' strengths in lots of ways can complement each other going forward. Is that something that played a decent role when you were thinking about what might be able to lure you away possibly from, extending your future at Meyer Shank Racing?
It was a big part of it, to be honest with you. I think at that, especially that time of the season, I felt like we were qualifying, very, very strongly. You know, and our Sundays just weren't coming together. And, you know, naturally, you look back on the races, and I rewatch every race just because I think it gives a good perspective. And I just remember thinking, like, how do they always get Graham to the front? You know, and even when I've been racing with him, it seems like his tire deck has always been very strong. And I can't remember exactly what track it was, but I remember just coming back going, well, if you could qualify like the 60 and race like the 15, you know, you probably have quite a strong, you know, season there. And, you know, I think in reality, that's the kind of season that Alex Palou did have, you know, and is achievable. And I think the first few conversations that I had with everybody at RLL was, I think across the board, me to them, them to me, is really recognizing that our strengths as individuals at that time could really come together in an extremely strong way, recognizing that we had been qualifying well and we'd had some unlucky results on the race, and then them feeling like they needed to take a step in qualifying performance, but obviously having very good races more often than not. So, yes, I mean, naturally, the hope is that we can both continue doing those areas very well and come together and just put it together in one weekend. Yeah, I think that really seeing those performances week in, week out was definitely a big factor in the end why we made a switch.
Yeah, the driver that you will be, you know, kind of, I guess, somewhat pseudo taking over for, as you mentioned, Takuma Sato, who drove the number 30, Sato's crew and engineers and whatnot will be transferring over to your program. I think this year was credited with, which I didn't know that this award existed previously, but what's called the Hard Charger Award that IndyCar honors at the end of the year, which goes to the person that made up the most spots from start to finish cumulatively over an entire season. I think this year the number was 88. So, you know, that goes from, say, starting 15th and, you know, you finish 6th, you make up 9 spots and you add those up over a season. And Taku had 88. I did some looking. I think Graham was like second or third in the series last year with 44. It's not necessarily a stat that you want to be leading, I guess, because yeah. it means that you're, you know, starting mid-pack, doing a great job of making up those spots, but then oftentimes, you know, finishing up, you know, in the top 8, top 10 or so. I wrote in my story today that someone like Alex Palou and I think Pato Ward, Scott Dixon, Joseph Newgarden, most of them either cumulatively this year either made up one spot total or lost one spot total, and you see where they finished. So it's obviously a lot better to start near the front and finish near the front, but at least you know that this car, you know, say on a bad day, you know, can do a lot in moving up toward the front. And frankly, we saw a lot of that out of your season this year. I think, what, 2 of the last 3 race uses, you made up a dozen or more spots in the race. So we've seen that you can make up some spots. We've seen that you can qualify well. This seems like a place where you can take some of those strengths, add in your qualifying capabilities, and hopefully turn this team into a season championship contender that I know you and Bobby both talked about wanting to create on yesterday's Zoom call. When you, outside of the team's on-track capabilities, what did you connect the most with when it came to sitting down and talking with Bobby or talking with Mike or Piers Phillips or even Graham over the last couple months as this all came together?
I mean, a lot of things. I would say probably the big ticket items, you know, from my side was, you know, how keen I felt like all the members of all the people you just mentioned were keen to have me as a part of the team. You know, I think that's a big thing for me. I think it should be a big thing for a lot of people, is going somewhere where I was feeling valued, really. You know, and obviously I know that I was feeling valued at MSR because I did get offered, you know, a contract extension, you know, but I would say, you know, the hunger and the passion, the direction that the team is going, is like in place and is about to happen. And I just really enjoyed the respectful way that, you know, Bobby wanted, you know, to proceed on, you know, the initial negotiations. It all actually happened quite quickly. You know, there wasn't like a, you know, many months sort of drawn out, you know, like just trying to everybody put the pieces together. It all actually did happen, you know, quite quickly. And it was really just the honesty and the ambition of the team, recognizing like where they are now, where they want to be from in all departments of the team, you know, from on track to commercial, just to operational. I feel like it's a team that's ready to win, and they already have been. You know, I think that's the important thing. You know, I was Takuma won the 500 in 2020, you know, and I had a lot of respect for Graham for what he's achieved from when they were a single car team. So obviously continued success after that. And I really just got the sense and the feeling that the team was on the precipice of having something really awesome happen. And that was something I wanted to be involved in, obviously. And I feel like from my side, although I still feel like there's areas I want to work on and improve on, obviously, that I also feel ready to go and take a step up and try and compete for wins a little more regularly. And I think that was, you know, you look at our season, and for sure the last two races, or sorry, the last two of the last three, I think we did win that hard charger award. But it's not really the one you want to win. You know, you really want to start on pole and win the race. You know, that's like the last place you want to be. You want to, I think you want to have the best start position versus best finishing position. You know, so certainly as a team, we showed we could do it this season. However, whenever we had a great starting position, we didn't turn that into anything. And I think that was the frustrating part of the season. And when qualifying didn't go well, for whichever reason, whether it was, you know, me stuffing it in the wall at Long Beach or having an issue in Portland, in those moments, we had a great ability to move forward, but you're realistically not going to achieve what we all want to achieve doing that every weekend. And I think just the honesty straight away about, look, this is where we think our strengths are. From the outside, this is what we perceive your strengths to be. I think we had a very similar read on all of that. And ultimately, you know, when it came time for it, I made the decision to make a change. But there was a lot of things that drew me to the team. And to be honest, I sat down with my manager kind of early in the season, and we were talking about 22, obviously knowing I was coming into the end of my contract. And honestly, just wanted to make sure that, you know, at that moment that there was going to be an offer from anywhere, really, including MSR at the time. I wouldn't have wanted to leave MSR without knowing that I was going into a great team and scenario. And there was only a couple of people that we really put on that list. It just so happens one of them came to the table and we were able to put it together, because and not that this really means anything now, but to stay at MSR, I know what areas I think we should be improving. I know the steps that you could take to try and do that. And I know it's going to be a successful team, but I still made the decision to make a change. I think that's how interested I was into pursuing this path, and how much I believed in, you know, RLL as a team, and that we as a group of people and as a come together and have a fantastic season.
You mentioned that something like this came together rather quickly. I know we first started to hear some rumblings about it. You know, either I can't quite remember whether it was late July or early August. And I know some of that, I'm sure that can vary from situation to situation, whether it's, you know, a span of a couple of days or even just a couple of weeks to a, you know, a long drawn out, you know, multi-month, you know, contract negotiation back and forth. I know you can't go into all of the details, but can you give us just some sort of a sense, you know, when you're of what it's like to be a driver in a contract year and how you go about, you know, starting to explore what your options might be and what the, you know, that like I guess probably middle of the summer, that time frame when we start to talk a little bit more about silly season, what that's like to navigate as a driver that's trying to decide whether they're going to stay, whether they're going to have an opportunity to stay, or whether they're going to go out and try something new as you have.
Well, I can only really speak for myself and for, you know, my management group, and our stance really was we were hoping that there would be a contract offer from MSR. And for a long time, that was the only offer on the table, although we were, you know, a little bit apart on some aspects of the contract. You know, I didn't really have a desire to leave unless we felt like someone was going to put something in front of us that we could believe in and would entice us in. And then it just so happens that Ray Hall did come to the table. You know, and after that, I would say in terms of getting an agreement in place, that was very quick and easy. You know, I think I've said this on the call yesterday. I think listening to people, I don't see any harm in that. And especially in the racing world, things move so quickly. You know, there'd been a couple of conversations, but Domsey didn't really know how these things were going to play out. And, you know, like I said to a lot of people, I'm happy. You know, I was happy at MSR. And I've always been, well, again, the lesson that my mum and dad taught me, the only offer that you have is the one in front of you. And, you know, I don't like to speculate on, you know, if the offer had come later, or, you know, what could have happened here and there, you know, because ultimately you make the decision based on everything that's been happening in front of you, you know, at the moment, you know, and speculating on, you know, coulda, woulda, shouldas and what ifs is a dangerous game to play. And, you know, ultimately I would never bluff with my career either. I've worked a long time to be in this position, but when it actually got close, all them things went very quickly. But it's, you know, and this is like I said to Michael and Jim after, and yeah, I hope they believe me on this. It wasn't an opportunity that I was going and seeking. I wasn't shopping, you know, myself around the paddock or anything like that. It was just a simple case of, you know, RLL reached out and in the end put something really interesting on the table that we wanted to pursue. You know, and after that, some of the other things that happened, I think would be better just to be left as, you know, private. And, you know, maybe over time, some of them things inevitably, you know, surface. But, you know, I would say that everybody had a good opportunity to do it and, you know, to get a deal done. And RLL was the place that I felt probably wanted it to happen the most. And, you know, they made it happen.
I know there were, we talked, I mean, I imagine probably on this podcast, and you were asked a little bit following Texas. Whether you meant to or not, you know, maybe had dropped something about last Friday when we taped about making some interesting, ironic friends at Texas after the little, not actual run-in, but maybe close call that you had with Graham there, and there was a little bit of a back and forth there. And I know you said on the call yesterday that really didn't take too long to smooth things out between the two of you. Just kind of were able to discuss that after the race and either ended back up on good terms or perhaps maybe even better terms than you guys had been on before. What? Just tell me a little bit about what your relationship with Graham is like and what you're looking forward to in having him as a new teammate.
Well, I mean, Texas was a funny one because, I mean, right at that time was, you know, just walking down the pit lane was probably the first bit of contact I'd had with Piers. And he just said, you know, what are your plans for next year? And I said, well, you know, I'm hoping to have a job, really. And that was, I thought that was kind of funny, especially with everything that was going on. And in terms of, like, the actual race itself, you know, Graham felt like I squeezed him a bit hard, you know, and I watch it back and, you know, I do think I squeezed him a little hard, but, you know, only 10% too hard. And then that was what I said to him. So I know there was, you know, not necessarily like words on pit lane, maybe more like in interviews, I would say, well, that day he probably wasn't too happy, but I also wasn't, I was confused why I wasn't that happy, because he still managed to get by. It's not like I chopped him and he ended up in the wall, you know, or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And that was the simplest thing to sort out. He dropped me a text and said, hey, I just want to have a chat. I went to his trailer and it was the most calm conversation I think I've had with another driver ever. You know, and it was a case of he wasn't waving his hands in the air, he wasn't, you know, effing and jeffing in my face or anything like that. It was just a case of, you know, he felt like I squeezed him too hard. And I said, yep, you know, I'll take my portion of that blame. And I was like, I will squeeze you so that your wheels are at the bottom, but, you know, I won't do any more than that. And that was really the end of it. I think that was one of them things that, you know, kind of wasn't really a thing, kind of was trying to be a thing, but then ultimately, and you know, me and Graham have chatted about this after, it wasn't a thing. You know, I went into the race, you know, on race two, the same attitude and same mentality. And, you know, I say with everybody, you know, I'm happy to admit when I've got it a little wrong, or, you know, there's something I should do, you know, different or better. And that was one of them, you know, but it certainly wasn't drawn into being anything. You know, when I look back on the aftermath, I think a lot of that also was, as a team, everybody at Meyer Shank Racing, we didn't want to be taken, you know, necessarily as always being the underdog, the pushover team. And what people have to remember on that is when you go racing for a season that's partial season, you know, part-time, your crash damage bill is important. And there are times, and have been times, where we've had to bail out of moves to prevent crashing. Because if we'd have crashed, we wouldn't go to the next race.
Mm-hmm.
However, that slowly starts to change. And I didn't want to be the driver that was easy to get past. I want people to work for it, obviously. And as a team, I think they wanted to be taken seriously. You know, so I think that was really just all blown up a little more. I mean, you know, pretty soon after that event, me and Graham went for dinner in Carmel, you know, just to like, you know, chew the fat, you know. And I would say more so this year, you know, obviously my relationship with him has grown, especially since there was the interest, you know, from the team. And I would say we've always got on well. I think that we've always had a good respect for each other. We've had a lot of, you know, close races together, you know, even when, you know, we didn't know each other that well. And in terms of joining the team, I mean, he's been great. You know, I certainly got the sense that he was very happy that I was going to be joining. And I think he pushed, you know, some of the right buttons at the right time to try and help that as well. And like I said to him, you know, I want to share his workload. You know, I want to contribute to the team, whether it's in the simulator, sponsor events, etc. You know, I want to be a proper member of this team. I mean, I want to be invested into the team and its performances and make sure that everybody, you know, can do the best they can and we can, because that's what it's going to take to put together a championship winning year, I would say. And you look at all these, you know, the Ganassis, Penske's, Andretti cars, you know, they all have strong teammates to push themselves and push each other to make that happen. You know, and certainly I'm very optimistic on who ends up in the third seat, you know, and I just hope it's a great driver, you know, so that they can push me, I can push them and elevate the team, elevate ourselves again and whatnot, and, you know, really just move forward together. And I think, and I'm not trying to say anything out of term, I think that's what Graham was missing a little bit this year, just from conversations we have had. And honestly, what I've read him say in the media too, and, you know, I wasn't trying to just fluff anything up. I said to him, you know, like, go and ask anyone I've worked with, like, I want to be a part of the team and I'm going to help. And, you know, I think he knew that and, you know, was excited to get going. But it is funny when you look back and, you know, even, you know, me and my parents and me and my manager get a kick out of it that, you know, after Texas, I don't know how many people thought that they would have been seeing me in a, you know, an RLL car, you know, but really there's been worse things that have happened on track and stranger things that have happened after that. So, I mean, it was really a non-factor, but it did make good drama for a weekend.
It sure did. I'll say this. I don't know that I wrote on it too much, only because I think I kind of recognized a little bit that it was maybe getting a little blown out of proportion. But I also think we as IndyCar media love those moments. Not that we love to see, you know, guys crash or get upset with each other, but I think sometimes we almost like don't have maybe a say as many of those moments as you know, NASCAR might, for lack of a better term, specifically in the last handful of weeks. So it's certainly exciting when you see that there's a little bit of tension. But I think at the same time, I think most of the time, or at least more often than not, when that does happen in IndyCar, it does seem like those are things that, you know, maybe get said in public in the heat of the moment, and you guys are able to iron those things out fairly quickly, because it does seem like most of the guys in the series are pretty tight with each other, which is always good to see, because you want to have that respect. You don't want to see the, you know, what we see sometimes in some series with drivers on track specifically almost looking like they're aiming to crash another guy. But sure. I guess maybe the one question or last question I have before we get into some listener ones, this team is in the process of building. I think the last time I heard it, it's growing every time I ask Kathy over in the communications department. I think now been quoted as 115,000 square foot new shop in Zionsville for Ray Hall, Letterman, Lanigan Racing to combine the shops that they had previously in Brownsburg, which still does exist in their IMSA sports car operation that I believe was in Ohio. Have you had a chance to go over and even just set eyes on that new site, even if it's certainly not anywhere close to being fully operational yet?
I drove out there the other day just to see it, honestly. I mean, it's a mighty impressive facility that they're going to be putting up, and you know, I don't like to say that necessarily them building a new shop was the shop itself. You're not going to a race team because they're building a new shop, but the intent behind the shop and where the team want to go, that was very appealing. Mm-hmm. And the investment that Bobby, Mike, David are putting into the team on a global scale in every department, you know, surely can't be ignored. I actually think Piers is hopefully taking me out there on Friday to see it and to, you know, be able to maybe get a little bit of a tour on it and whatnot, and, you know, obviously start going into RL's shop that they already have in Brownsburg. But, I mean, it's a mightily impressive building. I actually thought it was 115 as well, so maybe that's the number that we should settle on. But, yeah, I think it's just the level of intent, I think, behind everybody at Ray Hall, Letterman, Lanigan is incredibly strong, and you know, I'm really, really excited to be a part of that. And I would be it would be wrong to, you know, I had such an amazing time at Myershank Racing. I know we went into that probably on the last podcast that we did, you know, and I am thankful to Mike and Jim and the hard work that everybody in MSR put in, because without them, this kind of opportunity wouldn't come up. And, you know, that was a really nice close to that chapter. In the same breath, I'm never going to underplay truly how excited I am and how thankful I am to Bobby, Mike, David and Piers for this opportunity, you know, not just in 22, but also beyond, to go and have a good crack at trying to win this NTT IndyCar Championship. And, you know, that's the goal. And we're going to work as hard as we can to make it happen. And there's a lot of people to be grateful for and grateful to, from where I've been to where we're going. And frankly, I wish we were on track testing ASAP. I don't believe there's going to be any testing before Christmas, but I mean, I just can't wait to get started.
Now, I know someone asked it, I believe, at the end of yesterday's media Zoom to, I think, both you and Bobby, but for our listeners, I do want to go ahead and ask again, was the idea of being able to, you know, do some promos around the Jack Hy-V moniker. Did that play any role in helping seal all of this for you? I know that was something pretty funny, again, that we weren't maybe necessarily expecting, but was funny to see everyone kind of take off with yesterday when all of this got announced in the morning.
Yeah, I think there was some... I know it didn't play a role in anything. I think it would have been hilarious if it did. And it probably would have surprised me if they said... If Bobby had said, yeah, it made a factor, I probably would have... Probably not known what to say, in all fairness. you know, but as far as I was concerned, you know, what car and what sponsors the team wanted to put with me, I was, you know, I'm very proud to represent, because to represent the team is to represent the sponsors and ultimately represent everybody. You know, and I'm very proud that you're going to be driving the 45 Hy-V Honda. Seeing Hy-V's commitment to being able to bring back Iowa as a race, you know, plus their expansion that they have already had with RLL, you know, I was really excited. And then, especially because one of the other sponsors on the car is MyJack, you know, I thought it'd be funny if it was MyJack Hy-V, you know.
So is MyJack sticking around?
I don't know, mate. I don't know any of that. It's just the sponsors that they had this year on the cars and whatnot. And, you know, it just kind of, it kind of fueled the, what's the word I'm looking for? The fun, you know, yesterday, I guess. And I think it was nice to see, like, you know, I say, like, have a meme about it, but, you know, just to see people really engage and, you know, be creative and things like that, I thought was fun. You know, then my sister ends up texting me a bunch of funny ones too. And, you know, my girlfriend's dad's texting me like great ideas for some of them after they, you know, twigged on it as well. And, you know, not that these things are never, you know, extremely, like, they're not serious or anything like that. But, and it is fun to be able to interact with people on a fun, positive way. So, yeah, it was a good giggle. And, you know, if we're giving people great results and we're having a good time and fun time doing it, then, you know, I think that's what this is all about.
There you go. Actually, it leads well into our first question from Kinzer Hazelhun on Twitter asks, when and where will you make your first Hy-V store visit if you have not already?
I believe we have some things scheduled together for the start of November. So, yeah, be really excited to go and to meet everybody. And, you know, Bobby seemed excited for me to be able to be the Hy-V driver. So I don't know why I seem that excited about it. It seemed like it almost like it was a you know, like an extra story there that I haven't heard yet. but no, they seemed really excited. And like I already mentioned, I'm really excited to represent a brand, you know, that is, you know, clearly very passionate about IndyCar racing and also everybody at RLL. You know, and I had a really great outing at Iowa the last time I was there. I think we had 2 7th places. So naturally I'll be hoping to do that, but obviously better again next time. So yeah, it's I think there's going to be a lot of excitement in across Iowa in general next season. So I'm excited.
Jeremy Bullard asked this question. I know I saw asked a couple of times on Twitter yesterday, and I think I know the answer to it, but I'll go ahead and let you answer it. He asks, did you have any word on the paint scheme of the car? I know, I think in the video or the promos that we saw yesterday, it was that black Hy-V, you know, primary livery car that we saw in yesterday's video content.
Did I ever say in any of that?
Yeah, or like, did you have, like, I don't know. I'll say this. The way I thought I remembered is that, like, when Hy-V announced in August, they actually had already released those three liveries for the car next year. Am I right? Like the white one, the red one, the black one?
I mean, that is the plan. Okay. You know, I think they may have already said something. I certainly had no impact on any of the design or livery or anything that we actually just... It happened that they were getting a show car ready to take to Hy-V right at the same time that we were planning to make the announcement, which is how we were able to even shoot with that car in the first place. You know, just a, you know, happy, you know, coincidentally timed moment, really, which was which was great. And I thought the car looked awesome. You know, I'd be happy if we raced that one, you know, all year round, because I think there's something stealthy, you know, about the, you know, just kind of an all black car, you know, clean logos, etc. And yeah, I was excited. I've seen the other liveries. They look great as well. But the black one would be my favorite one.
That was, I remember specifically from that press conference. I mean, obviously the big news was about, you know, the Iowa doubleheader, and I guess at that point we did get the official confirmation that Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan Racing was expanding to three cars next year. But I remember seeing those liveries and immediately thought, man, those three could, you know, almost certainly next year make a run for, you know, potentially one of the best looking cars out there. I think that red one is maybe somewhat similar to a paint scheme that Graham ran a few times this year, I think with a different sponsor. I'm not sure if it had ever been with Hy-Vee specifically, but the, you know, I loved all three of those, the all black, the all white, and the all red. I think those would be cool to see on the grid next year when they roll out. And I know you guys will, you know, certainly have some more sponsors, but I also really love it when, you know, a car looks fairly clean. You know, it's not just like cluttered in all of these different sponsors. And I think it'll be exciting to see, you know, that clean, fresh, brand new livery on the grid moving forward next year. Let's see here. We've got another, Ray Hall related question here from Matthew Mendenhall. I guess you probably answered it in some ways, but, is there any one thing that you're most looking forward to with this new team opportunity? And part two of his question asks, does this move or alter your mindset for any personal goals in this series moving forward?
I mean, I'll answer the second part because I think that's easier coming on top of my head. Not really. You know, my goals for to be an IndyCar driver, to be to try and compete for wins. And then if you're doing that, hopefully compete to win the Indy 500 and try and win the NCT IndyCar Series Championship. You know, I mean, when we've set high goals, I've set high goals for myself so that when we achieve them, it's something that we're very proud of. And, you know, I feel like taking this step to RLL is going to help us achieve, or help me achieve them goals. You know, and I guess the final part of that really is probably the biggest thing to answer the first part of the question is I feel like the goals are not necessarily more achievable. I feel like we're in a position now to try and achieve them better than where I was before. And I'm not trying to say that disrespectfully. It's just that's a sign of how much I believe in RLL as a team and what I think we can do together. And I think that the goals I've, you know, set myself are more achievable now. And, you know, we'll, you know, obviously in 2 years, I hope everything's panned out well, and we'll see how it all goes. But yeah, I'm really excited to get started, obviously. There wasn't one thing, but, you know, probably the overriding factor was I felt like we could achieve our goals by making a change to RLL.
Well, think that's as great a place as any to leave things at, barring any major news like, you know, Roger Penske selling the series or something wild. I imagine this might be our last podcast of the year. But really appreciate
like a nice one to end on.
Yeah, so it's been a great piece of news to finally get to talk about a little bit more extensively. Certainly happy for you and excited to see what this three-car team will look like next year. You, Graham, and driver to be determined. Also want to thank all of our listeners for listening along this year, supporting us on Twitter, for sending us questions every week. Love getting to interact with some new fans on Twitter, and always love your guys' participation that way. And also certainly can't thank you, Jack, enough for joining this year. It's been a fun addition to the podcast, and can't, you know, feel like it's been a great way to chart an incredibly exciting IndyCar season through all of your own highs and lows that seemed like it kind of, you know, and for better or worse was, you know, kind of charted along how rapidly changing and always exciting this whole IndyCar season at large was. So certainly thank you for all the time and for investing in this and giving our listeners a way to really understand and explore the series from a little bit more of a firsthand basis point.
Yeah, man, it's been a blast. You know, I want to get on again at some point. That'd be great. You know, guest appearance, whatever sounds good to me. But I think that's the thing, is so many people love this sport, and you know, I include myself in that, by the way, that it's nice to be able to reflect on a weekend, honestly, you know. And obviously you always try to be optimistic and positive, but you know, I like to hope that maybe people feel that they got an honest answer with, you know, what was going on, not just a PR, you know, question or anything. And that's how I've always tried to be with the media in general, honestly, is be honest. You know, there's times where it's been good, there's times where it's been bad, times where it's not been good enough for me, times where it's not been good enough from the team. You know, and the complexity of having to make a big decision, you know, has really been actually very well documented this year on our podcast. You know, this is one of them times where it seems like a really very nice way to, I guess, do our final episode or last episode of this year, let's say, with an accumulation of a lot of events throughout the year, but actually with, you know, a pinnacle moment. And that's obviously making this change now. So thank you for your time and inviting me to be on it. Thanks to everyone who's listened, all the questions. You know, it's been awesome. I'm glad to have come on this journey and, you know, brought people on this journey, especially in what's been a big year for me in my racing career and also in my life. So it's been awesome.
All right. We'll leave it at that. Look forward to having you listeners join back in this feed again next year as we get ramping up for another, I'm sure, exciting, ever-changing and somewhat surprising IndyCar season in 2022. But for now, thanks as always for listening to IndyCar Weekly. I'm Nathan Brown, IndyStars Motorsports Insider. Enjoy the off season.